What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. He's John Krofcik. And I'm laughing because John and I talk even when we're not on a microphone. And we just made each other laugh.
Yeah.
Didn't we, John?
Well, we were talking about free-range kids.
Well, I was talking about free-range chickens. And I didn't want to say that I had eaten any free-range kids.
That's
but
true.
I have eaten free-range chicken. But you may be wondering why we're even getting ourselves into this little Gordian knot. Well, I'll tell you. Remember Dion and the song The Wanderer?
Ah,
I
yes.
roam around, 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 around. Remember that, John?
I do.
Yeah, well, we're old enough to do that and date ourselves, which I did throughout high school. But in the recent period, America has put a bubble or maybe bubble wrap over our children, John.
That's true.
And we tether them, and we keep them on a string and a
helicopter
leash.
Helicopter parents. And
whoa,
they...
hovering. Swooping in to protect them because we fear that there's a bigger bogeyman out there than ever in the past. Now,
you watch too much cable news. You'll believe that.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the things. That when
new,
you've
alert,
got to fill,
new alert.
When you've got to fill a 24-hour vacuum when it comes to news, there's all kinds of things that perhaps we could live without knowing.
Yes.
And that gives us a misimpression of what's going on. And look, crime figures belie the notion that your child cannot be out of your sight lest they are going to be abducted by someone who is dark, shadowy, foreboding, and out just to, you know, make, you know, terrible things happen in your community. I mean, that's one of our problems, because I think we really have developed this glass is half empty
right.
concept.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's bad. It's bad for the kids. You know, it's just not healthy.
Well, I remember with my kids, I'm going to be honest, we did it. We got one of these kits. It must have been a 1-800 number on television. And it was Stranger Danger.
Yes.
When the truth is that there's probably more chance, unfortunately, that a child is going to be attacked or abused by that crazy uncle that everybody has than a stranger.
No, I think that's right. I think that's right. I don't know how that Stranger Day. I remember my kids, I think, came home from school with something about Stranger Danger.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, we had to make that series of films, Home Alone, and all the things that could befall your child in about 10 seconds, and Joe Pesci and others, you know, coming into
yeah,
your
that
home.
That was pretty painful for them,
yeah.
though.
I know. Actually, they were good movies. And we used to run around our neighborhoods, John, when you think about it, when I go back into the 60s and early 70s, and we were wild and free.
My mother would kick us out. She'd get out of the house.
Right.
And
they
out.
Had no idea where right. we were going. Or they knew you're going up to the park or whatever it may be and come back when the dinner bell rang or when darkness descended,
right.
whatever
right.
it may be.
That's how
but
it
don't
was.
Come home before that. Well, Lenore Skenazy. Now, she achieved fame and some infamy, John. She let her young son travel alone on the New York City subway. And people were stunned when this report came out. And it was given a name, free-range children, and she was called the world's worst mom. I mean, all these things that were thrown at her for allowing her child that independence and that freedom. And he was a young boy at the time.
Right.
But having said that, she was confident.
Right. She thought
in
he was up to it. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And in the choice that she was making. And so she's been at this for a very long time now. I think he's about 55 now. No, he's a young man, but certainly of age to be on his own now, clearly in anyone's mind. But Lenore Skenazy has never given up, and she's always fought back. And we have talked to her in the past, and I've always found her to be really smart and really determined to make certain that her message is not convoluted and that she can really fight it with facts about really the crime statistics in America and the way that we now look at this issue. And she's continuing that battle with a new organization that she has. She'll tell us all about that. But she really did spawn the free-range child movement here in the country. And, John, she's gotten a law passed in a rather conservative state that doesn't hold a parent to account if they give their child a bit of freedom. And she'll tell us about that on this podcast, too.
Well, we are talking to Lenore Skenazy. And, Lenore, we talked to you years back when some people said you were America's worst mom.
Oh,
you
think that's
spent a lot of time.
I am.
Well, no. I mean, you tried to prove in many ways that you were not America's worst mom. And remind people what it was that got you into such attention and notoriety in America.
Oh, sure, Larry. So it was literally 10 years ago that I let my 9-year-old ride the subway here in New York City alone, wrote a column about it with that title, Why I Let My 9-Year-Old Ride the Subway Alone, and 2 days later I was on the Today Show, MSNBC, Fox News, and for contrast, NPR, defending myself against charges that indeed I was a terrible mom, eventually America's worst mom, and why would I let my son do anything that was so dangerous and awful? I must not care if he lived or died. So that was it. That was the inciting incident.
And where's your child now? I mean, are you keeping
God
tabs?
Knows.
Wait a minute, he's 19.
Yeah, actually, just turned 20.
Oh, 20.
He's in Scotland at the moment.
Okay, so you're certainly not helicoptering him. You never were. But we had a lot of parents at that time, while you were saying set them free, give them responsibility, and, you know, prove to yourself that a lot that you have taught them, they can apply in the real world. There were so many parents who were helicoptering.
The thing is that everybody always thinks I'm anti-helicopter parenting, but I'm actually not against any parent ever. I'm against a culture that has shoved fear down our throats to the point where it almost seems crazy not to helicopter. Because if you're told that, so many places your kids can't even leave school without being signed out by their parents. Or in Rhode Island, they tried to pass a law that would have made it illegal for a school bus to drop off any child at a bus stop where there wasn't a chaperone waiting to walk them home, even if they just lived a couple of houses away, until seventh grade. It's crazy. And then you read the magazines, like Parents Magazine, which is the Bible of, I hate to say it, the parenting industry, had an article once where a mom asked a question, what if my kid is old enough to stay home alone for a little while I run an errand, but now she has a play date over. Can I go and, can I run off to the dry cleaners and leave them alone? And the magazine said, absolutely not. You want to be there in case there's a squabble. You want to be able to step in. So here you are, you're a normal parent, you're reading the magazine, and somebody in authority is telling you you can't leave your 9 or 10-year-old playing Barbies with her friend without you always being there because they can't handle the absence and you have to be watching over them so closely that you can tell when a spat is escalating and you can immediately step in. Well, who's not helicoptering? If that's what you're being told by the authorities, and then you read about parents who get arrested for letting their kids play in the park or walk home from school, you don't want to get arrested. You don't want to do something that the authorities say is dumb or dangerous. And so suddenly you look to the world like a helicopter parent, but you've been instructed in that, and you've almost been forced to become a helicopter parent. So
there are so many images that are juxtaposed. I mean, I understand your point totally. On the other hand, of course, if there is one incident where a child is left alone at home and something goes awry, well, we had a whole series of movies, Home Alone, and
we saw a lot of things go awry. That was so realistic.
Right. But my point is that gets blown up to such a degree that everybody then has to reconform to the notion that unless you're helicoptering, you are negligent.
Right, because what if Joe Pesci comes to your home? you can't say it wouldn't happen. It could happen. Somebody was writing to my site this morning, and I thought it was a great thing. How do we sort of regain the perspective that we need as a culture in terms of how worried we have to be every single second about every possible terrible thing that could happen to our kids? And, parents do get arrested for letting their kids wait in the car for just a very brief time, the time it takes them to pick up the pizza or the Tylenol. And So the woman writing to me said, well, why don't we say, you know, like when you drove to the mall today, did you decide to park far enough from the building that if there's a sniper on top of the building, you could, you know, he wouldn't be able to hit your car? And it's like, what? You're a crazy person. That's not going to happen. It's like, well, it could. It's happened sometime.
Well, then we do have this, Lenore, this issue where security in our schools now has really become a hot button because of all the school shootings. So, you know, people are juxtaposing that kind of information with something that you're talking about, which is very different in terms of giving them some room and some latitude that you think is reasonable. But those things get conflated.
It's right, because our brains are, you know, when we're in fear mode, everything is this big ball of terror. I was actually scheduled to speak to a school on Long Island this month, and they pushed me back 2 months. And the reason was because of the school shootings. I'm like, but I'm not talking about school shootings. I'm talking about letting kids play in the park and walk home from school. And that has literally nothing to do with a school shooting. But because the fear button had been so recently activated in our minds, it was just too much to think of giving kids any kind of independence whatsoever, even though obviously the two are not related.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we had a gentleman on that we recorded with just about a week ago, and he's written a book called It's Better Than You Think. And when you look at it, Lenore, he was talking about the world itself, whether it's disease eradication or whether it's hunger, whatever it may be, and even crime reduction. And that message hasn't necessarily gotten through. And when you had a candidate back in 2016 who ultimately became president talking about American carnage and people coming to invade us and destroy us. So how much has that overlay of what's going on in America affected the thinking people have about how much freedom to give their children?
Well, I think there's an enormous effect that if you're constantly told, like if you turn on the TV or even if you go on Facebook, you're going to hear something scary. And the reason you're going to hear it on television is because television, especially the news, is not there to inform you. Television is there to make money. And the easiest way to make money is to put on a story that will get the most eyeballs. And the most eyeballs will come to see a story that scares them. You want to know what could possibly go wrong, or you want to hear a tragedy. It's just the way we're wired. And so that that mandate to get and keep the eyeballs has meant that if it bleeds, it leads. And with a 24-hour news cycle, it means that something is bleeding 24 hours a day, and you can't escape it. And then if you go online, I'll tell you, lately I've been bombarded with so many of these stories that just regular old people put on Facebook. And they're generally from a mom somewhere in a town that you haven't heard of, some sort of smaller medium town somewhere in America. And it says, dear friends, I never thought it would happen to me, but it did. I was at Target / IKEA / the grocery yesterday with my two little ones, and I was in the aisle with the T-shirts, and I looked up, and there was a man staring at my kids. I went in the next aisle, and you won't believe what I saw. The same man staring at my kids. I have no doubt that he meant to sex traffic them, and it was only because I stared him down that I saved my children. And you'd think that people would say, let's look at the statistics. Oh, interesting. The Crimes Against Children Research Center says how many children have been taken from their parents in a public place under age 10? Oh, zero. Zero children have been affected by this fantasy. But instead of saying that, everybody says, oh, my God, you're a hero. Thank goodness for you. I'm so glad you didn't look at your phone. By the time you looked up, they'd have been gone. This is great advice. The same thing happened to me. And so we really just almost love being afraid. I mean, why do people go to horror movies? Why does Stephen King sell billions of copies? I think there's something in us, and I don't understand it, that wants to think that we're in the middle of the scariest Liam Neeson movie ever, Taken Part 72, that just makes us feel alive. And when you start having that message from every corner of every media and then repeat it to you by friends who say, did you see this today? You start feeling like no one is ever safe, and that becomes a belief. Even though it's based on nothing, it becomes a belief.
Now, Lenore, I know what you're suggesting is perhaps that that person that they're staring at, or that guy who's staring at them, is probably more likely the estranged husband and father of these children than it is somebody who's going to put them into a sex trafficking ring. However, we do read these stories, of course, that sex trafficking is really getting worse in America.
It's not getting worse. I'm sorry. It's not getting worse. If you read stories that have statistics, or if you look at the FBI, where they spend all their money trying to find this thing, what the terrible thing about sex trafficking is that sometimes young runaways who are in their teens and probably coming from a really terrible situation at home can get lured into prostitution, which we now call sex trafficking. But the idea that 3, 4, 5, 7-year-olds are taken from public places and put into a sex trafficking ring, that is literally not true. And who do I interview when I talk to about, you know, and I try to find out my information about this, is a man named David Finkelhor, who's head of the Crimes Against Children Research Center. All he does is research crimes against children. And this particular crime isn't happening. It's not to say that there aren't young people who are unfortunate enough to end up in prostitution. That's true. I'm afraid it's always been true. But it's not that kids are being plucked off the streets. It's that, you know, teenagers are being somewhat seduced into this and have no idea what they're getting into. But that's not a child being taken, you know, while I'm checking the price tags on, you know, do I want to get these flip-flops? The child is not being taken from behind me and sold into sex slavery.
Okay. Now, and you made that very clear, and I like that. When we looked at it, when we were growing up, and I was growing up in the 60s, and, well, the 60s primarily, and you look at it, you said that at that time, perhaps 90% of us walked to school. We had neighborhoods.
It wasn't quite that high, but yeah.
Okay, well, a substantial number of us.
Right.
And today it's about 15%.
Right, between 10 and 15%. Right. And so part of that is because the newer schools that are built in the far, you know, far suburbs of town end up being on the far side of the suburbs because that's where the cheaper land is. And it has a larger catchment than maybe when we were growing to school and there was the local school. But nonetheless, it is a tiny percentage of kids who are walking to school today. And even in the schools where kids are, you know, where the school is still where it was in 1962 and the houses are still surrounding it were there in 1962, even those kids are being often driven to school out of this fear that the minute your kids are not literally in your, you know, next to you, Velcroed to you, somehow they are in danger, even though, as we were just discussing, these fears of crime are really outlandishly out of whack, and our crime rate is back to, depending on which statistics you look at, either the rate of 1963 or 1967, and those are using FBI statistics.
So let's go to Wallingford, Connecticut. A mother oversleeps one morning. Her son misses the bus. What happens?
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time and will lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
Well, this is an 8-year-old boy whose mom had overslept because she spent the evening and into the wee hours of the morning with her aunt who was dying. at Yale New Haven Hospital, gets home at 6 in the morning, oversleeps, her son gets himself ready for school, gets his backpack, eats his breakfast, misses the bus. And so he starts walking to school, and while he is out there, somebody spots him, and it has become, as we were just saying, so unusual to see a child alone in the big wide world that somebody called 911. And the 911 person dispatched the police, and the police car comes up to him and says, "Son, what are you doing?" And he says, "Oh, you know, I'm walking to school. I missed the bus. My mom overslept, blah, blah, blah." And they say, "Oh, well, let us take you." And they put the kid in the car, and they drove him to school. And then they turn the car around, and they go to the mom's house, and they slam on the door, you know. And the mom comes out and is like, "Where's your son?" And she's like, "I don't know. I just woke up. I got to go. Oh, my God, it's late. Oh, my God, I got to get him ready for school." And they said, "No, no, no. He already walked. He told us you overslept." And she said that the cop said to her, "You're despicable." And they put her in handcuffs, and they put her in the cruiser, and they took her to the station, and they took her mugshot, which you can see online, you know, facing forward and facing sideways. And she was charged with, I can't remember, I think it was either, you know, danger to a minor or negligence or something like that. And it's been 2 years. I think that the charges actually were very recently dropped, but not until she already had to change houses because they couldn't afford the rent on their house that they had while they were still trying to pay for a lawyer. And so the idea that you're doing a good deed by calling 911 if you see a child either in a car or walking to school, that's not true. The good deed is if you make sure the kid is okay. So if you see a kid and they're in a car and you're in front of the dry cleaner, wait a couple minutes and see if, you know, the parent comes out of the dry cleaner. If you see a kid walking along, you can go up to them and say, "Are you okay? You know, do you need anything? Are you lost?" "No, I'm fine. I'm walking to school." "Okay, you know the way?" "Yeah, okay. Let me see. Let me watch you cross the street."
But we've told so many of our kids not to even talk to strangers. And we've had these things like stranger danger and so forth. Are they even going to respond to most people?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, we have to get rid of the idea of stranger danger. I mean, what I've learned is that what the psychologists say that makes a lot of sense, is that you can talk to strangers, but you cannot go off with strangers. And that's actually an easier lesson to teach your kids, because is the lady at the grocery a stranger? Then why is mommy talking to her? You know, I don't know. So maybe she's not a stranger. So you just tell her you can talk to anybody, but you can't go off with anybody. And I think that's going to keep kids safer. But in any event, I think we have to get back to the idea that it's not terrible for people of different generations to talk to each other, to act as if every adult-child interaction is prelude to a rape or a kidnapping is a crazy way to live.
How did Carrie Ann Roy of Austin, Texas, end up with Child Protective Services at her door?
I'll tell you. So this is an Austin mom who let her 6-year-old play outside. And from what I understood, her 6-year-old had been very, very ill, like touch and go as a baby. So this is a joyous thing that finally he was well enough and happy enough and healthy enough to go outside and play. And I think I can't remember literally if he was 100 yards or 100 feet from her door. But once again, some quote-unquote good Samaritan sees the kid, says, "Where do you live?" He points to the house. She marches him over, rings the doorbell. Carrie Ann Roy answers the door. "Yes, what's going on?" "This is your child, right?" "Yes, it is." "He was playing outside." "Yes, he was." "Huh. That doesn't sound safe to me." It's like, "Well, you know, he's my kid. I actually love him more than you. Thank you very much. Goodbye." I don't know if she said that. But in any event, she thought everything was over when she said, "Well, thanks for bringing my kid home." And that was it. Starting to think, "Oh, my God, does this mean that I can never let my kid play outside because this crazy woman is going to march him back all the time?" In any event, that wasn't the end of it. Then Child Protective Services comes because apparently the woman called 911 and said there's a lady who lets her child play outside. And so to come and investigate, a person arrives at the house, and the investigation was pretty horrible in its own right, in that the Child Protective Services person then insisted on interviewing each individual child by themselves. And the 8-year-old daughter of Carrie Ann came to her mother afterwards and said, "Mom, there was such a weird question that the lady asked." And it's like, "What?" She said, "She asked if I'd ever seen any movies with people's naked parts in them. And I didn't know that there were movies like that." And so the mother's like, "Oh, great. Oh, great." So because Child Protective Services opened a case, they have to go down the list of all the horrible things that the mother could be doing. You know, if she lets her kids play outside, well, she must show them porn, right? Maybe she's pimping them out. And so these poor kids have been, if you ask me, exposed to something far worse, which is interrogation about all these horrible things that their parents weren't doing in the supposed name of keeping the kids safe. In the end, Terry and Roy are cleared of everything, but in the meantime, the kids are traumatized, and so is the mom, who, you know, really, if that was a good neighbor, and she marched the son over to Carrie Ann's house, and she said, "Are you aware your child is playing outside?" "Yes. And I know where he is, and he knows he can't go, you know, beyond the block, and I trust him, and I trust my neighborhood, and I even trust, look how good the neighborhood, it has people looking out for each other. Here you are looking out for my son. Thank you so much." That should be the end of it.
Now, you started the Free Range Parents movement, and mm-hmm. when does free range, in your mind, I mean, you talked about the limits that this mother placed on the child, and that those were very reasonable. I think that child was about 150 feet from the home at the time that mm-hmm. this calamity mm-hmm. was taking place,
yeah, right.
according to authorities. When do you consider it to be perhaps a little beyond range, if you will, when a child really is not being in some way under the supervision and the clear direction of the parent, mm-hmm. and it's wrong? I mean, what are the guidelines there?
You know, I think we all know it when we see it. It's sort of like porn. If you have a three-year-old in a dirty diaper who's running across the street, and you know you march them back to the house, and the parent had no idea that the kid was gone and doesn't seem to care that you brought them back, you know, it just seems to me pretty obvious that if a parent has decided that their kid is ready for some independence and knows pretty much what's up with their kid, then that's not neglect. There was a book that was published in 1979 called Your, it was a series of books, but the one for six-year-olds was called Your Six-Year-Old Loving and Defiant. And it has a list of things that an average six-year-old could do. And it's like, can they tell right from left? Have they lost a couple of their baby teeth? You know, and obviously they can walk, you know, around the neighborhood like a radius of 8 blocks. And do they know their address? And, you know, walking this radius of 8 blocks was just a normal milestone back then. And now it's considered somehow impossible or dangerous for a kid to do something that a generation or two ago was considered absolutely so normal as to be, you know, duh.
I know, but so, Lenore, you hear everyone say, "Ah, it's not like the old days. You know, we sent the kid out. They went to the park. They were with their friends, and they didn't come back until the dinner bell rang at dark.
Right, right,
and it was
right,
all
right.
good. And we all remember that. I did that.
Yeah.
But it's different today. What
it
do you
is
say
different
to them?
Today. Well, I'm trying to bring back those days. The only thing that's different is that we don't do it anymore. As we were just discussing earlier, the crime rate is at a 50-year crime low. So if you were growing up in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or aughts, crime is lower today. And so if it wasn't crazy for us to be sent out to play and to come back, you know, when the streetlights come on and have fun and, you know, build a fort or play tag or Barbies or hopscotch, all this stuff that has sort of evaporated from the scene, and I think sadly so, all that is not an abnormal, crazy idea that can never come back again. The only thing that's keeping us from doing that and from giving our kids the really the halcyon childhood that many of us remember is the idea that it's dangerous. Not that it is more dangerous. Not that it is crazy. It's just this new level of fear and what-ifing, and I heard that one time in 1983 something terrible happened, so nobody should ever have any freedom again. We're really at a point where in society, if something bad happens to anyone anywhere, we're willing to say, okay, nobody can ever do that again, ever, anywhere, anytime. That's it.
Well, in Utah, you tell us that if you send your kid out to play in the park for an hour or buy a carton of milk or even walk to school, they're not going to be arrested for negligence. And the bill is called the Free Range Parents Law. This obviously sounds like a manifestation of what you've been working on for so many years. Is this the greatest success? Or tell us what successes you have had over the last 10 years.
I have to say that this is one of the greatest successes, because what it does is renormalize the idea that parents can decide when their kids are ready for some independence. And, you know, when we take away kids' independence, it's not like we're, you know, we think we're just keeping them safe. Well, is it safe to have kids sitting on the couch all day when diabetes is soaring, when obesity is soaring? Is it safe to have kids not learning how to ask for directions? Is it safe to not have kids know how to skip? Kids are arriving at kindergarten, they don't know how to skip. You know, is it safe to have 19-year-olds who have the activity level? They're literally as sedentary as 60-year-olds. So we keep saying we're doing this for the safety of kids, and yet we're ignoring the greater problems that are created by not giving kids any independence whatsoever. So to have a state say, wait a minute, we're putting this back in perspective. There's no such thing as perfect safety. There never is. A kid can be hurt falling down the stairs. A kid can be hurt climbing a tree. But we believe in our kids. We believe in our community. We believe in our parents. We're going to put it back in their hands. We're going to give parenting back to parents and childhood back to kids. That, to me, is an enormous step forward. And now I'm hearing about other states that are doing this, too. And I just got a letter this afternoon that New York is probably going to propose.
Oh, really? So is Utah the first state to have adopted something quite like this?
Yes. And you know, if anybody is interested in the law in their state or even in their town, so I started Free Range Kids, but now I blog and run an organization called Let's Grow.
Yeah, what's the difference between the two?
Free Range Kids now has a board and a budget, and so legally it had to change its name.
Oh.
So now I'm Let Grow. It's still me, still blogging, still blogging the same ideas. But if you go to letgrow.org and you go to the bottom, you can click on the Let Grow Proclamation, which is one sentence long, which is our kids have the right to some unsupervised time, and we have the right to give it to them without getting arrested. And that's really what I'm just asking places to pass. It's that kids deserve freedom, too. You know, if they are only allowed to be inside or in a car or in school or in a supervised activity like Little League, I mean, that's not what I would want for my own self. I don't want to be under somebody else's micromanagement every single second of the day.
And what kind of blowback are you still getting 10 years later? What do you hear from parents? And on balance, do you have more people supporting this movement and this sense of self-reliance than in the past? Or are you still getting a lot of folks saying that you're the worst mom in America?
You know, it's so hard to tell because I hear both so loudly. I would say that there are a lot more people today who are understanding that, like, a life with no freedom, no exploration, no exploits is not what they want for their kids. And they're trying to figure out how to get that back. And then when they start looking into it, of course, they don't want to get arrested. So there's a lot of support for the free range idea and for Utah. I mean, most of the articles about the Utah law have been, isn't it crazy that we need a law that makes it legal for parents to let their kids play outside? But they're positive in terms of, but of course kids must play outside. So that's good. The blowback is there's a television show called The Talk. Have you heard of it?
What is it called?
It's called The Talk. It's like The View.
Oh, The Talk.
On CBS.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they talked about the law the other day in such scathing terms that I was, you know, amused and appalled. The head of the table or whatever she is, the host, Julie Chen, said there's a law in Utah that is going to allow children with sufficient maturity and good judgment to play outside. And the venom in her voice just made the whole audience go, ooh, yes. And she said, it's called a free-range law. Doesn't that sound crazy? And then Ozzy Osbourne's wife, Sharon Osbourne, who, of course, should be a parent on the parenting, says, what? Letting children play in the park? That's preposterous. I'm like, yeah, why are there parks at all? Nobody should ever play in a park.
And living in that household, I'm sure they didn't see any harmful behaviors.
That's right. Right. And then the person next to her, whose name I don't know, very, very pretty actress, said, it's crazy to let a child play outside. What about in 1979, Eitan Peitz was allowed to go two blocks from his house, and he was never seen again. And it is a tragedy. That is a total tragedy. There's no doubt about it. That's a very horrible story. It's also, I did the calculation. So since 1979, there have been 152 million children born in America. And yet we bring up, once again, the one saddest, worst, most anomalous story. And we use it as if that's the touchstone that we must all, you know, touch before we decide whether we let our kids do anything. And the difference between today and when my mom was raising me is that nobody thought she was crazy to let me walk to school. Nobody thought it was crazy for her to let me play outside with my friends or go next door or go down the block to find Joel Barnett and play Batman with him. And it wasn't crazy then, and it's not crazy now, even though it was not a perfect world then, and it will never be a perfect world. If we're going to wait for a world with zero crime, you're never going to let kids have any independence whatsoever, and they will grow up inside a box, and we will have kidnapped them, and we will have closed space. In fact, we're being the kidnappers.
Lenore, let me ask you in closing. America sounds to me, by virtue of some of the things that we don't want our kids to do, to be a pretty fearful society. And
yes,
whether it's a terrorism attack or whatever,
yes,
we play these things up. What role does the media have in this, and what role should we be playing?
Oh, my God. The role of the media can't be overstated. The brain works like Google, and it captures all these images, right? And then when you ask, gee, is my kid safe at the bus stop? Up comes, thank you very much, the talk, the picture of Eitan Pet, because that's the easiest one to retrieve. The stories that the media has brought us, the saddest stories from across the globe and from across history, right, across 50 years, it will find these stories, and they become so easy to retrieve that they are the first search results in our brain. And then, you know, when you're searching for, like, can I get a cheap ticket to Arkansas, you go with the first three things that come up. Oh, Google Flights and Expedia, whatever. But when the first three things that come up in your brain are Eitan Pat and J.C. Dugard and Elizabeth Smart, because those are the easiest ones, we think that those are relevant to our search. Is my child safe outside? No, I saw this picture in the media. And so we get this very false idea of how unsafe our kids are, when in fact we're living in what the Washington Post called the safest time in human history to be a child in America. And so the media, by virtue of only giving us the terrible stories and never the boring 152 million other stories that are out there, very much warps our view. And then it just reinforces it, because that's the story that keeps us captivated.
Well, Lenore, you have kept us captivated for the last 30 minutes, and you've allowed us to roam and get into all kinds of topics with you. And as always, you've been great about it. Lenore Skenazy, and she is running an organization now called letgrow.org. And I thank you so much for coming by today on America Trends.
Thank you, Larry. All I've been studying my whole life is America Trends, so it's very fulfilling to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much.